Hanukkah, we learn for the Kriyas HaTorah, the Karbanos that the Nesiim brought in the Mishkan, the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. On the first day of Hanukkah, we learn the Karban that was brought by the first Nasi, and the second day we learn the Karban that was brought by the second Nasi. The Mechaber has a machlokes with the Ramah exactly how to divide the Aliyah, because you have to give a minimum of three Aliyahs, and every Aliyah has to have a minimum of three Pesukim, and the Parshiyot only have six Pesukim. Bayom HaRishon only has six Pesukim, so you can't divide it in two. So then each Aliyah gets three Pesukim, but you have to have three Aliyahs. Exactly what he does. And Machaber says that you lay over the same thing. The Kohen, the Levi, divide the Pesukim in half, and Yisrael reads over the whole thing. So it comes out that you lay the 12 Pesukim. And the Ramah writes the minig that the Ashkenazim follow, that the Yisrael lays the next day's Nasi. Means, let's say, on the second day of Chanukah, the Kohen and the Levi divide the Korbanos of the second Nasi, Bayom HaSheni, and the Yisrael lays the Korbanos of the third day's Nasi. Machaber says, no, you never lay anything that doesn't belong on that day. So everybody says that that's L'shitasim in Hilchas Sukkah. What Aliyah do you lay on Chol HaMoed? So on... The Gemara says in the end of Sukkah that on each day of Chol HaMoed, for the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah, you lay in the Sfeika D'Yomah. We who live in Chutzlo is laying the Sfeika D'Yomah. So on the, let's say, on the first day of Chol HaMoed, in HaTorah we know it's really the third day of Sukkah. And with the Rabbanim we make believe is this maybe it's the second day. So you lay in Bayom HaSheni, Bayom HaShishi. So the Ramos, so the Mechaber says that's all you lay. You give three, you give four Aliyahs. The Kohen lays Bayom HaSheni, the Levi lays Bayom HaShlishi, the Shlishi lays Bayom HaSheni, and the Revi lays Bayom HaShlishi. Lay all the same thing. And the Ramah says no, that the Kohen lays Bayom HaSheni, the Levi lays Bayom HaShlishi, the Yisrael lays Bayom HaRevi, which for sure is not part of the Sfeika D'Yomah. For sure, the first day Chol HaMoed Pesach, first day Chol HaMoed Sukkah for sure is not the Yom HaRevi. The only Sfeika D'Yomah is it really the Yom HaShlishi, like we know it really is between me and you, we know it's the Yom HaShlishi. The Rabban, they said you have to make believe that it's really the Yom HaSheni. So the Yom HaRevi for sure is out of the question. So the Ramah says that's okay. The Shlishi lays by Yom HaRevi, and then the Revi, which is the unique Aliyah of Chol HaMoed, because on a regular Sheni V'Hamishi, on a regular Hanukkah and Purim, you give three Aliyahs. So the thing that's unique about Chol HaMoed is that you give four Aliyahs. The Shkodesh Chol HaMoed gives four Aliyahs. So the fourth Aliyah is the most important one. So the fourth Aliyah lays over the two, the sake of the Yom again. So everybody says that if in the Mechaber and the Ramah, the Shitos, he's only going to bring us a right in the Mechaber from the Tosefta. So what do you do in Eretz Yisrael on Chol HaMoed Sukkah? What do you lay? Mechaber writes that quotes the Tosefta that the Ramah does not disagree with. The Ramah didn't live in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramah lived in Poland. The Mechaber lived in Eretz Yisrael. Mechaber quotes the Tosefta, and that's the din, and that's the meaning. That was always so. That on the first day, Chol HaMoed Sukkah. So the first day Chol HaMoed Sukkah is the Yom HaSheni. There's no speak of the Yom in there. So you lay in by Yom HaSheni. So you give four people get the same Aliyah. Kohen gets by Yom HaSheni, the Levi gets by Yom HaSheni, the Shlishi gets by Yom HaSheni, the Revi gets by Yom HaSheni. So why don't you have a little variety? Variety is that the spice of life. So obviously you're not supposed to spice things up. Shalik you did. You're not supposed to lay in a parsha that doesn't belong. So that's the tain of the Mechaber. That's what the Bir Agrav quotes. That's the tain of the Beis Yosef. The Hakan, if that's what the Tosefta says you do in Eretz Yisrael, and that was always the minig that you keep on laying over the same thing, only what belongs to that day. So how can you do differently in Chutz Lares? When you have a Sfeika D'Yomah on the first day Chol HaMoed, it's a suffix, whether it's the Yom HaSheni, Yom HaShlishi. So lay Yom HaSheni, Yom HaShlishi, but then how can you lay Yom HaRevi? You should lay over the Yom HaSheni, Yom HaShlishi. You shouldn't be able to lay anything else. So that machloik is Taka the Ramah Shver. I practice. We follow the Ramah. We lay the next day's Kriya, which really has no shaykhah to that day. Taka Shver. Difficult from the Tosefta that the Mechaber quotes in the common practice in Eretz Yisrael. So that's what everybody says. That's the Shitasim over here by the Kriyas HaTorah of Chanukah also. That the Mechaber holds you never lay anything from tomorrow. The Ramah says it's really not the same at all. really not the same at all, because on every day of Chol HaMoed Sukkos, you're laning, what's the purpose of laning Karbanos and Nesham Lechvanos or things? What are you going to lane Karbanos that belong to a different day? You're laying the Karbanos that belong to that day. The Mechaber makes sense that you only lay the Karbanos that belong to that day or that are spake at the end of that day. How can you lay on the first day Chol HaMoed Sukkos? How can you lay on a Karbanos for Yom Arvi if today for sure is not the Yom Arvi? That's like laying about Shavuos, about Pesach. It's today Sukkos, when are you laying about something else? But on Hanukkah, what? We're laying the Karbanos that had to be brought today. Hanukkah doesn't have any Chiyuv Mustafin. We're not laying Karbanos that were brought today. There was a Chanukah Samigdosh in the days of the Chashman Rain, because the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Cheskel, Bobo Pritzim Chilulu. When the Pritzim used the Beit HaMikdash for Avodah Zarah purposes, the Kedushin HaMikdash was in his Batla, under normal circumstances, you only need a Chanukah HaMikdash in the beginning, in Machanach HaBeit HaMikdash in the beginning. Where's that Hechetimse? You build a Beit HaMikdash and you need two Chanukahs. You need one Chanukah in the beginning and another 200 years later, 300 years later, you make another Chanukah HaMikdash. What do you do that for? The answer is, the structure remained standing intact, but the Kedushin HaMikdash was pulled out from underneath. Because the Baba preaching the Ruach said there had to be Mechanech the Kedushas Beis HaMikdash in the days of the Chashmana. So the way to be Mechanech it is by bringing special Karbanos. So normally you have to have a Hayrasha, you have to have Nevi'im to tell you what special Karbanos to bring. So the days of Moshe Rabbeinu they brought the Chanukah Sanasim, the days of Shlomo. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Navi. In the days of Shlomo HaMelech he had a Nevuah what they should bring, and they brought accordingly. In the days of Ezra they had Nevi'im, Chagat Chaim Malachi, so they brought accordingly. Lossi Lavoit and Navi Yecheskel says what's going to be. In the days of the Chashmonaim, they didn't have any Nevi'im to tell them what to do. It was post-Kanabur. So they brought Karbanos, but they couldn't bring any Keteris. Like in the days of the Nesi'im, they brought Keteris. The Gemara says that was an unusual thing. The Gemara in the Midrashim says, not an unusual thing. That never exists any other time. It's a Hayrashah, purely Hayrashah. You never have a Yachid Misnadif Keteris. The whole thing is that it's a Hayrashah. So they had to have a Nevuah for that. The fact that a chatos is offered, the Gemara in Zvachim in the first part talks about the chatos Nachshon. Nachshon ben Amnon Yadav was the first of the Nesim who brought for the Chanukah Sanasim on the first day on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So the Gemara talks about a thing that's called a category of a carbon that's called a chatos Nachshon. Chatos Nachshon is lav davka Nachshon ben Amnon Yadav. The Gemara says we have such a chatos Nachshon means a chatos which is not bo alachet. Usually somebody's Mechal Shabbos B'Shegig, he brings a Chatos, somebody eats Chel V'Dam, but they ate Chomet B'Pesach, or they ate on Yom Kippur, so they have to bring a Korban Chatos. The Chatos Bo, when a person violates an Aver B'Shegig, which if he would have done the Mezid, he would have been Chayv Koris. So then you bring a Chatos B'Shegig. And sometimes, Allah says that you have to bring a Chatos totally unrelated to Chet. Chatos sometimes Bo, not Allah Chet, for example, Chatos Nozir, Chatos Nitzerah. Sometimes have other chatoes that are served as a matir and mechusir kaporah. So the Gemara calls that whole category of chatoes that are not boy malachet a chatos nachshon. The Gemara says, why do you call a chatos nachshon? Call a chatos nozir. The Gemara says, the first one in the history of the world who ever brought such a chatos was chatos nachshon. The second day was was yitocher. I don't know. Then it was woman. Every day of the Chanukah Sanasim there was a chatos nachshon. Every day was a different person. But we call it Chatos Nachshon, the Gemara says in Zvachim, because he was the first one who brought such a Chatos. So there were exceptional things at that time. That was not being Nevuah. Chatos not brought in Adam and Adava. So they had to have a Nevuah from Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's what they should bring. It's not that they had an inspiration and they decided on their own. In the days of the Chashmonaim, they didn't have any Nevi'im, so they just brought the regular Korbanos. So the Korbanos that we read on Chanukah every day, the first day Chanukah we read the Korbanos of Nachshon ben Amnon Yadav and Matzah Yehuda, the second day you read, I think, Yisachar, the third day you read Zvulun, and so on. It's not that that the 12 days the Chashmonaim did a Chanukah Samigdosh, in the middle of the period of Bai Shem, you have to go to Pritzim Chilu, and every day of the Chanukah they brought these. You need a Navi to tell you HaHirashah that that's what he's supposed to bring. They didn't bring those Karbanos. The Chachamim were Mesakein, you should link Kriyas HaTeres, Deicha, to the fact that in the days of the Chashmonaim they had to have some kind of Chanukah HaMikdash, Chanukah HaMikdash, that had been Mechanach HaMiner, that had been Mechanach everything all over again, because everything had been used for Avodah Zarah purpose. All this HaMikdash was used for Avodah Zarah purpose. So there had to be Mechanach everything, so the way to be Mechanach is by bringing Karbanos. So we read about the Karbanos that the Nesim brought. You could just as well have read the Karbanos. You could have just as well started from day number 9, the Karbanos and the Nesim. There's no halacha of Moshe Nesim. there's no correspondence. The first day of the Chanukah Tanitin belongs to the first day. So the Rambam makes more sense in Hilchos Chanukah. The Rambam makes more sense over there. In fact, on the last day of Chanukah, the Seichemis for today, on the last day of Chanukah, the Seichemis Tainis, and that's the practice that a lot of people have, that since the Kriyas HaTorah for sure goes till the end of Naso, our meaning is that we even lay in the Ramo, I think, right? But the meaning is that you lay into Bahaloisa. I think the Sfardim don't. The Sfardim only lay until the end of Naso. They don't lay into Bahaloisa. Because you only lay in about the Chanukah Sanasi. What are you going to lay in Bahaloisa Sanasi? What does it got to do with anything? And our meaning is no. That the Nisim, that in the days of the Chashanayim, they had to make a new menorah. They had to be Mechanech the menorah also. So we lay into Bahaloisa also. Why not? It also has a Shaykhah with Chanukah. So Bein Kol V'Kol, we're going to learn so much. Even according to the Mechaber, we're going to learn more than, not just going to learn the 8th day. So even the Mechaber is asking, we have to learn a lot more, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, we have to learn so much more. So why Shalavah, why be so cheap by the Kohen and the Levi, that you only give the Kohen 3 Pesukim, you only give the Levi 3 Pesukim, and then the Shlishi gets 2 columns, 2 Avudim and the Sefer Torah. That's not fair. You should really give the Kohen Fader Aliyah. What's Alpidin? Fader Aliyah, 4 psukim instead of 3. If you have 5 psukim instead of 4, that's taka overweight, that's obese. What do you need that for? What's the difference? But Alpidin, 4 psukim is the healthier. Sometimes people are underweight, and sometimes people are normal. So 3 psukim is underweight. This will pull through. The Gemara says in Megillah that you have to have 3, normally, you have to have, Kriyas HaTorah has to have 3 aliyahs. Every aliyah has to have a minimum of 3 psukim. So 3 times 3 should be 9, but the Gemara says, no, the halacha requires you have to have 10 psukim. So the Gemara says, who should be the lucky winner? Who gets 4 psukim instead of 3? The first, the second, and the third. So the Gemara says, whichever way you do is okay. But in the Gemara, there is mashma, that 4 psukim is preferable to 3 psukim. So if you can arrange the aliyahs in such a way that everybody gets 4 psukim, is mato. So that's what the Seichemet time is, and many communities have that practice. That on the 8th day of Chanukah, even if you practice the Sechemet with the Sfardim, you follow the Mechaber, there's one in Eretz Yisroel. So even if you follow the Minhag Sfar, that you only learn the Kriya for that day, on that day, you don't learn tomorrow. But today we are going to learn till the end of Naso at least, so why not learn for the Kohen the whole Aliyah of Bayom HaShmini, then for the Levi Bayom HaTshi, then give the Yisroel, or give the Kohen couple of days, give the coin 3 days, give the lady a couple of days, and then give the shlishi, divide it equally. That maybe does make a difference. Equally, that does make a difference. You can raise 4 psukim instead of 3. The Gemara Mesochim learns that a din from the pasuk by the Chanukah Sanhedrin, kafachas, soros olam leaptoris, kafachas, hakos maso lechol mashu de kaf, achas. What does it mean, kafachas, soros olam leaptoris, and it's full of ktoris? Torus is tiny little particles that are ground up of visualizing in your mind the jar of shelled peanuts or something like that. Tiny little, not peanut butter all in one big lump, a jar of things that are all broken up into tiny little particles, granulated, or a jar of, let's say, coffee, something like that. So if an Adam Tommy touches one of them, so I just say, well, he whatever he was a Rishon L'Tumah, right? So he touches this tiny particle, makes it into a Sheni L'Tumah. That's it. He didn't touch all the tiny particles in the jar, so the one that he touched became a Sheni. If that touched the other one, maybe he'll make it a Shlishi. If it's Tumah, if it's Tachin, okay, yeah, maybe not, whatever. Chayachum and Tamayachum and the Rabbana, fine. But that's as far as it goes. It doesn't go any further. So the Gemara says it's a special din that we learn out from this pasuk. That's the question. We really learn out from this pasuk, or it's only an Asmachta. That's the Shaila, the Milus. The Gemara speaks about the Milus, the Chumash that you have by Kachim. Kaf achas hasoros olam leachtoris means that the kaf that was filled up with ktoris, hakos of asor, the pasuk declares, the chom asher bekaf, all of the ktoris, the tiny granulated particles that are in the kaf, are treated as achas as if it were one unit. So when if an Adam Tommy, the pasuk is not talking about this, but the Mayanach Kamina, if an Adam Tommy will touch any one of those particles, and let's say he's a face Rishon and he touches it, makes it a Sheni, I treat all of the particles together, even though they're granulated and they're separate. They're just touching each other, but it's not one unit. We treat it as if it were all one unit. A special din in Kachin. This is the Mishnayis and Chagigas. Terek Chaimah Bakadosh. It lists off all of the chumas that you have in Tumah V'Tareh. by Kochim over and above Chulin. So that's one of them. That's a machlek, it's a rishani. Whether that's a drosh gemura, that's an asmach. And Hilcha Shabbos, you have such a din, that's a real din there, right? Hilcha Shabbos, there is such a halacha that if I carry a kli, and the kli has a lot of little pieces in it, so I don't say that I'm Leveran Haisua in each and every individual particle. That's in it. I say I treat everything that's in the kli, that's called Eged Kli. But it's the same concept as over here. Sirif Kli, Eged Kli, same thing. I treat everything that's in the kli as if it were one unit. Moshe Ligmar has it in. I'm taking out a big, let's say I have a long watermelon. I have long spaghetti. Before they chopped up the thing, I have long, long strings of spaghetti. And let's say it's in the Rishus HaRabim and I carry it into the Rishus HaYochid over here. In the Rishus HaRabim and I carry it in, and it's half in and half out. Now if I would have chopped off the spaghetti or cut the watermelon in half, I would have carried in half of the spaghetti or half of a watermelon, I would have been chayav. How's it kashir in? But the Gemara says if it's a long, long unit and I carried in half and half is still out and half is in, so the Gemara says that you're not chayav, because the haitzua has to be done on the entire object, or if the watermelon is in the Rishus HaYochid and I carry out half of it, then not chayav. So the Gemara says, well, what if you have a kli and you took the kli from outside to inside, or inside to outside halfway, so it's now on the border, so the haitzua or the hachnas on the kli you're not chayav for, because it's you're still on the border. But then you have inside the kli, you have a lot of tiny little particles. You have full of peanuts. And I have 1,000 peanuts inside and 1,000 peanuts outside. Now, if I would have carried 1,000 peanuts, I would be chayav on that alone. So the Gemara says, no, since all the 2,000 peanuts are in one kli, I consider everything, egg is kli, I consider everything, all the food that's in the kli, as if it were one unit. And I say, not only is the kli half in, half out, the one unit of all the 2,000 peanuts is half in, half out, so you're not chai. That's for sure a din d'oraita. That's different than d'oraita. Taisus has a machlekes with the Rashba. The Ran and Beitza and Daphi Zayin calls machlekes Taisus and the Rashba. What's the din of Marba Bishiurim? Is that a Nisa Deraisa or a Nisa Derabanan? Let's say on Shabbos. There's a Chayla Sheyesh B'Sakana, someone is very sick and the doctors say that he has to have a fresh apple ripped off from the tree. And just get an apple from the store, he's going to die. He has to get a fresh apple that's ripped off from the tree, he has to pinch it in order to save his life. So the cross message is there for Shabbos, that you can't get it very quickly, so you're permitted to rip off the apple yourself. So the Gemara has a discussion, what if instead of ripping off an apple, he breaks off a whole branch from the tree and it has 25 apples. So that's Marga Bishurim. The Chol Shesh B'Sakana only needs one apple. He doesn't need 25 apples. But if I rip off one apple, a second apple, if I rip off 25 apples knowing in advance that the Chol only needs one apple, so the 24 additional malachas are certainly prohibited. I had no hefer for that. The Kuchnam is only matter me to do one malacha. That's Marga B'Malachas. That's for sure you're not allowed to do. But what if you're Marga B'Shurim? You're not Marga B'Malachas. Instead of plucking off one apple, I break off a whole branch. I did one act of Kasira. But instead of doing an act of Kasira on one apple, I do one act of Kasira on 25 apples without that. So the Gemara says you're not allowed to do that. This is the Gemara in Menachos, in the first half in Perikar Bishma, that you're not allowed to do that. You have to rip off the one apple rather than break off the whole branch that has with it an additional 24 apples. So it's a little unclear, and the Havamin of the Gemara is clear that it's an Issa Deraita. The Gemara had a Havamin there, and I'm sure it's an Issa Deraita. So the question is, what was the point that the Gemara backed out? The Gemara came to the Maskana. So what is the point of the Maskana? So the Ranin Beitza, Das Yudzayim, quotes the Machlokes Tosfos in the Rashba, whether the Maskana we back out from that or not. What's the halacha of Marba Bishurim? The Marba Bishurim on Malachas, on Shabbos, is the Raita or the Rabban? So there's a whole deal in Rishonim about this, and Achranim about this. Or the same thing, a Chaylish Eish B'Sakana needs some chicken soup, or needs some cooked chicken. You don't have cooked chicken or cooked chicken soup, so you can't have a goy. There is no goy available. You have no Shabbos goy. So we have to cook it ourselves on Shabbos. So when I cook, does it make a difference if I cook the whole chicken or three chickens? I put one big pot on the fire. The act of Bishul is putting the pot on the fire. It does make a difference whether I put a big pot full of chicken soup, a big pot full of chicken, because it's one act of Bishul. So do you say Mizirabbanan? You're not allowed to. Ma Rabbi Shimon is also Mizirabbanan. Is it worse than a Nisa Dirabbanan? Is it Nisa Deraisa as well? Or should you say no, it's only a Nisa Dirabbanan? So that's the Machlokes HaRishonim. So the Aras HaMeach suggests maybe we should distinguish between the various malachas. Maybe you have to analyze each and every malacha. Maybe some of them are Nisa Pu'ula, some of them are Nisa Chaloy. Whenever the Torah prohibits you from bringing about a result that food will be cooked, is it an Nisa Gavra, Nisa Chepta, so to speak? He says maybe you should distinguish between various malachas. Maybe in some malachas, the nature of these malachas is that you are doing a Pu'ulas malachas, and then it doesn't make a difference whether you have Minan Torah, it would make a difference whether you just have a small amount or a large amount. It's the same act of malacha that you are violating Chilul Shabbos. Your gabra is doing malacha. But if you say that the nature of some of the malachas is an Issa Chalois, it's an Issa Chepta, not to bring about this result, but to bring about more of a result, so then Hasfara no benefit, that should be an Issa Deraita. So that's what the Aras HaMeach wants to say. So in the middle of his discussion, he suggests maybe you should distinguish between the various malachas. He brings out this notion that in Hoytzor, if a person is going to carry on Shabbos or Yontif, and he's going to carry more than he needs. He's going to carry for the purpose of Pikuach Nefesh, or on Yontif he's going to carry for the purpose of Eichel Nefesh, and he's going to carry more than he needs, and the extra amount that he's carrying is all in the same kli with the original amount, in an oifen that is Eged kli. So the Aras HaMeach says that cannot constitute an Iser of Marva Bishurim. That should be, for sure, Minat Torah, there's no Tosefis Iser over there. Because Eged kli is treated as one big unit, so it's one act of Hoytzor, so for sure you can't say over there that Marva Bishurim should constitute a Ribui Malach. So by Shabbos, such a thing exists in Minat Torah for sure. That's the Halacha of Eged Kli, Gemara is in the middle of Shabbos. But by Kodshim, the Drosha that the Chacham learned up in the Pasuk, Kapachas, the Sorot of Leah Torahs, that's a Machlokes HaRishonim, whether that's a Drosha Gemura there, right? So that's only an Asmachta Mid Rabbanan. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in the Rambam. The Rambam writes that Ner Chanukah is such an important mitzvah that even an Ani HaMesparnes Min HaTzedakah is obligated to be, who can't afford to light Chanukah candles. He just barely makes ends meet. He's buying food in order to stay alive. So the Rambam says he's obligated to be Shoyal Al HaPsach and to go Shnorim Ani, to ask for an Adavis, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hadlokas Neres Chanukah. Usually the Rambam passes the Shulchan Aruch that is not the case. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Sukkah and in Yeriday as well, Simen Kuf Nun Zayin, the Simen of Yehar Gal Yad. The Rambam quotes from the Rishonim like that, that Hamavazim Zayivazim is Yerikim Lichayimish. One is not obligated to spend more than one fifth of his total savings in order to observe Mitzvah Sater. When it comes to Allah, he says in order not to violate an Aveira, they have to give away kol hol beiso in order not to violate the Yisr. The only time you're permitted to violate the Yisr is when you have a sakana or a suffix sakana. You have to have at least a suffix sakana. But anything less than that means to give away all of your money. So you give away all of your money. That's what it says in the Torah. B'chol miyodecha. You have to sasha makecha b'chol miyodecha. You have to give away all of your money for Yisurim. But for mitzvahs, you're not mechuyev to give away all of your money. More than one-fifth of the total savings you're not mukhayif to spend from mitzvah, even if the nature of the mitzvah is that it's a mitzvah of eres, and by not spending the money you'll just forgo the mitzvah. The Rosh Hashanah will go by and you will not have heard Kir Shefer. Sukkot will go by, you will not have shaken a lulav in an essig, and you will not have sat in the sukkah. If you don't have, you don't have, you're not mukhayif to spend the money. Garnish. So here in Hilchos Chanukah, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rambam that it's not so. That Hamavazes, Ayavazes, Yes Mechaimish doesn't apply. Filo Oni, Hamasfanis Min HaTzedakah is obligated to go borrow money, or to go ask for an Adavis in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hadlokas Neres Chanukah. How did the Rambam know that this is so? So the Mefarshim say, the Rambam got it, the Magid Mishnah, I think, writes on the side. The Rambam got it in the Mishnah by Arvi Psochim, in the last Perek in Psochim. It says, Afilo Oni, Afilo Ani Hamasinus and Atzok is obligated to observe Arba Kaisis. And what it means obviously is that he has to go ask for Nadavis to fulfill Arba Kaisis. The Takamanishtana Arba Kaisis from all the other Mitzvahs on Earth. So the answer must obviously be because if the Suminisa involved, so the same is true regarding Hadlokas Neres Chanukah. Since the Mitzvah of Suminisa involved, so you say that the Din of Hamavazai, Vazi Yes Mechemish, doesn't apply. How far do you go with this business in Nisa? The Marshal of the Gemara says that although Hadlokas Neres Chanukah and Mikra Megillah and Arbikoitis and Mitzvah Shasei Shas Man Groma, women should have been exempt from these mitzvahs. Nonetheless, these are exceptions to the rule. What does it mean? So the Pashtus is that the nature of these mitzvahs is that they have Pirsumi Nisim. What about Halal on Chanukah? Are women obligated to recite Halal on Chanukah? The Mishnah says in Sukkah that women are not obligated to recite Halal on Yomim Tovim. It says if a woman, if the husband doesn't know how to say Halal, and the wife does know how, the wife is more learned than the husband. The wife learned in the Kohelet, and the husband didn't. He had to go work for it. So the wife knows how to say the Halal, and the husband doesn't. So can she say the Halal and the Gemara to the husband, which are Me'er Koina? The Gemara says in Sukkah, the Vikar Adin Shemeh Koina applies to Halal also. The Zmanah Gemara, the Chazim would recite the Halal, the people didn't have a Siddur. The Zmanah Gemara, they didn't have Siddur. That was in the days of the Gaonim, they started to write Siddur. In the days of the Rishonim, it became more popular. The days of the Rishonim, they didn't all have Siddur. And later, in our generations, we have Siddur. So in the days of the Gemara, they didn't have Siddur. So the practice was that people didn't know Halal by heart. So the Chazim would say the Halal. Maybe he had a Siddur, maybe he said it by heart, whatever, maybe he was a genius. But he said that he would recite the Halal, and all the people would be Yotzei b'Shemei Koina. The whole sugya of Shemei Koina is in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Ches. The whole sugya deals with Halal. It starts with Halal. The whole discussion of Shemei Koina. So the Mishnah says that if a woman is reciting Halal in order to be mighty her husband, or the children go to cheder, the children go to yeshiva, and they know how to say the halal, and the father does not know how to say the halal. He didn't get a yeshiva education. So the child is before bar mitzvah cannot recite the halal to be mighty the father, because mishen b'chuy b'dover and emoti asachem v'dechei vosim. So the Mishnah states clearly that women are not m'chuy even halal. Women in ktanim is only m'chuy mitam chinuch. They're not m'chuy even medina b'halal, so they cannot be mighty their husband. So what is the husband going to do if he doesn't know how to say halal? So you cannot rely on Shemei Koinus, and the Mishnah says, Ein Achareya Mashehe Momrit. He has to say after his wife or after his children, he has to recite the whole halal word for word after they say it for him. So the question is, that halal, that Mishnah is speaking about halal on Yontif, halal on Sukkot, Mishnah on Sukkot. What about on Chanukah? Would you apply the same to Chanukah? Maybe I should say, the Gemara says in Erech and Daf Yud, that halal on Chanukah has nothing to do with the fact that it's a Yontif. Halal on Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, the halal mitam simchas yontif. So women are exempt from that. The Mishnah says in Sukkah that women are exempt. But the halal chanukah, the Gemara says, is zechel anes. So since it's zechel anes, maybe I should say afin hoy bi'os anes. The women are mechuyev in halal. So the Rambam writes the Feirush Nasa. The Rambam writes all of the dinim of halal in hilchas chanukah. He wanted to make hilchas chanukah into something, so there's hardly anything there. They took all of hilchas halal and he stuck in the hilchas chanukah. So that made up one chapter. Azoi Hilchas Chanukah is only one parish. The Dinam of Hadlokas Haneris and Alanisiv. There isn't so much in the Kriyas HaTorah. There's very little there. Hilchas Chanukah. One parish in the Rambam. So he wanted to fatten it, so he made it two prokim. He put all of Hilchas Halal into Hilchas Chanukah. So the Rambam writes, and if a woman is saying Halal for her husband, the husband has to say word for word. He doesn't write it in Hilchas Sukkah with the Mishnah. The Rambam took the Mishnah in Sukkah, and he put it over here in Hilchas Chanukah because he wanted to fasten on Hilchas Chanukah. So you see the famous that the Rambam holds that women are part of the Mahalo, even on Chanukah, they're not with it. So that's Rav Shlomo LaVilna, it's the kash on the Rambam. How can he say that? Shouldn't he agree to this svara that Achen Haibi Yosaneh, that women should be mechuyev in reciting a Halal on Chanukah, because the Gemara says the Farish and Erech and Daf Yud that the Halal on Chanukah is Zeichel Anes, it's not because of the Chas Yontif. So it's Zeichel Anes, and women should be Mechuy, because I can have your son. So the Pashtus is, you have to say, that Zeichel Anes is not the same as Pirsuming. When the Gemara says that women are Mechuy, and Arbikoytis, and Mikra Megillah, and Halokas Neres Chanukah, because I can have your son, so the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva in Chelek Arachayim, where he was asked Akasha, why are not women Mechuy to put on tefillin? Also Zeichel Anes. So the Pasuk says in Chumash, Lamanti Yeteres Hashem Efecha, Ki Biyarcha Zaka, Hatsiach Hashem in Mitzrayim. That the purpose of Hanochas Tefillin is to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's Zeichel Anes. So why don't we obligate women to put on tefillin? So some Sefer says there's more than one teres. Some Sefer says a good teres is that there's a difference between Zeichel Anes and Pirsumi Nisa. When the nature of the mitzvah is Lefarsei Mitzaneis, Laharis Olagalus Mitzaneis, that's the lotion of the Rambam in Hilchas Chanukah, Laharis Olagalus Mitzaneis. then you apply the principle that Afin Habiyas Anes, but if you just have a mitzvah which is Zechel Anes, but the essence of the mitzvah, that means that's the motivation, that's the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this mitzvah, that's the reason why the Chacham Ma Misakan the mitzvah Zechel Anes. But in the Kiyom HaMitzvah, the actual fulfillment of the mitzvah, there is no Pirsumi Nisa. So then we don't find that women are mechuyim. So that's the reason why women are exempt from anochas tefillah. And for the same reason, there are many posts that say that on Purim women are obligated in mikra megillah. Yeah, mikra megillah, but not mechuyim matanis laziyani mishalach manas. Rabbi Kivega quotes the Pichadush, who disagrees. Early Rachareinim, I think the Ramah says, either the Ramah or the Magen Avraham, I think the Ramah says that women, just like the mechuyim in mikra megillah, are also mechuyim in Shalach Manas Matanis Lev Yerim. Rabbi Kivega quotes from the Pichadush, who disagrees. So the Pichadush disagrees because of a pasuk. Mishloach Manas Ish L'Reyeh, Ish V'lo Ish, Agzeres HaKos M'Shem. But you can give a Hezber, you don't even need Agzeres HaKos, you can give a Milsa de Bitaima over here. Because only Mikra Megillah is an act of Pirsumi, so you're telling over the story, you're telling over the net. Masheini came, Mishloach Manas Matanis Lev Yerim, that's only Zechel HaNet, that's not Pirsumi Nisa. So similarly on Chanukah, one can argue the point and say that the only aspect of the mitzvah sayyam of Chanukah that's pesumin nisa is the hadlakas on Neiris. But the amiris ha-halel, we say halel on different occasions during the year. So how is there an indication that the halel on Chanukah is pesumin nisa? The most you can say is that it's zechel anes. Hadlakas on Neiris, that's pesumin nisa. What's taka the difference? Because when you do the hadlakas on Neiris, you tell over the story of the nes. That's what Rav Soloveitchik pointed out. That in the Masechet Sofrim, the Nusach of Haneris Halalu appears. The Masechet Sofrim the Nitziv quotes this Masechet Sofrim in its commentary on the Shulchan. The Nitziv's granddaughter married Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was Rav Soloveitchik's grandfather. So the Nitziv was his great grandfather, whatever it was. So that's one of the few sons that he used to look at. He used to look at Rishonim. But among Nachrayim, he didn't look so much, but in the stuff in the family. Beit Halevi, even though Beit Halevi has a lot of Tulpulim, but that's his great grandfather, so he used to look in Beit Halevi. So the Nitziv has a discussion of this line in the Masechet Sofrim where it says that when you madlik the neiris, you say lahadlik ner shal chanukah, then you light the candles and you say haneiris halalo adam adlikim. After you finish the whole piyut of haneiris halalo, then you say shehachiyanu, and then you say shosanisu. Legamri, not what we do. Legamri. So the Nitziv discusses that. Where did the Ramah get from the Maharil? Where did he get that we have a different practice? That we say all the three brachas have lost the other. We say the order differently. We say first Shas and Nisan, then you say Shachyanu at the end. And then the Nitziv says Fakir. He says the two brachas, the order is first Shachyanu, then you say Shas and Nisan. And you recite both of the brachas after the Hadlaka is all over. But I'll call upon him. So he thought the Mashmoras of the Masechet Sofrim is perhaps he wasn't so 100% vadoes, but he thought as a chumrah the Masechet Sofrim sounds like it's saying that if somebody lights Chanukah candles and he doesn't say Haneris Halalu, a svara that he's not Yosef. If you light the Neiris Chanukah, you don't say the bracha lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. You don't say any brachas of pashtuses that you are Yosef. The Gemara says the brachas are not miakvos. The Gemara says the brachas on mitzvah is not miakvos. Al pi pashtus, we should assume that it applies both to mitzvahs deraisa and to mitzvahs derabbanan. Rabbi Yosef Engel has a pesanayin file. He wants to, has a whole maimer. He wants to say that brachas anat miyakid is only on a mitzvah deraisa, because the lashon haGemara is, the Gemara is talking about a mitzvah deraisa of hafrashas truma. So a person is makrish truma menatayra, and he didn't say the bracha sheker deshanim tosafan, but the brachas on mitzvah is only the rabbanan. The Gemara's Lashon Brachas is, how can you say that the Brachas HaMitzvah is Me'akevis and the Kiyum HaMitzvah Deraisa? The Mitzvah Deraisa, the Brachas Derabbanan, how can it be Me'akev? But what if the Mitzvah Derabbanan, the Brachas Derabbanan? Then maybe there is room to say that it is Me'akev, Kach Tiknach HaFamim, that you got to do this Mitzvah with this Bracha, and if you do the Mitzvah Derabbanan without the Bracha, so you're not Yosef. I'm Asvara to say like that. So he has a whole Maimer he wants to push to his original chiddush, but the pashtus says no one else holds like that. He wrote little tulum son. He didn't mean it. So if a person is going to light Chanukah candles, which is at the Rabbanon, and he's not going to recite the bracha, so the pashtus says that he's yet. But there's a mockum to say that if he lights Chanukah candles and he fails to say Haneris Halalu, I swear that is not yet. If he didn't sing Mo'ez Tzur, even if he didn't say Mo'ez Tzur, the pashtus says he certainly yet. Because most tzur is not a takonif and an shekness agdala, doesn't appear in the Masechet of Mara. Neves halola does appear in the Masechet of Mara. What's the reason why you should assume such a, why should it be oil al adas to say such a wild thing? So that's Rav Soloveitchik said, he doesn't think that it's so wild. He thought that it was a very good story, that since the nature of the mitzvah, of these three mitzvahs, Arba Kaisis, Mikra Megillah, and Hablokas Neres Chanukah is Pesumi Nisim, not just Zechel and Nes. Zechel and Nes means that's the motivation, that's what prompted HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what prompted the Chachamim to institute such a mitzvah. We're talking about Pesumi Nisim, so the Farsamus HaNes, you have to tell over the story. So in Arba Kaisis, in conjunction with the Arba Kaisis, you recite the Haggadah. Mikra Megillah, you tell the whole story. And a Chanukah, if you're just going to light the candles and you're not going to tell over the story, as far as that, there's no Pesumi Nisim. So maybe the Haneris HaLolo is Likubo, that if you don't say it, you weren't really in the Faris and the Sanas. Ah, they don't quote on Eretz alone. Okay. So they clearly hold that it's not Ma'akim. Fine. But the question is whether the Masechet Sofim ever meant that it was Ma'akim. Masechet Sofim mentioned starting on Eretz alone in the middle of the Brachas. So that's the question. Maybe the Masechet Sofim meant that it's Likud. Because these mitzvahs are distinct from other mitzvahs. As we said, women al pi pashtus are not mechuyev in halal on Chanukah. Because the halal is only zechel and nes, it's not pirsumi nisim. What's taka the svara that afilu oni hamachazer al apsochim, even in oni v'evyon, who can't afford it, is obligated to get nedavis in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? Rav Soloveitchik said, al derech hadrash, that what's the idea of performing a mitzvah that's pirsumi nisim? We want to demonstrate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went out of his way to break the laws of Teva on behalf of Klal Yisrael, that he did it in the past and he should do it again now. That Al Pi Teva, a lot of things are going to go wrong. We want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go with us L'mayla and our Teva. He should topple the Israeli government, and he should see that Arafat and all the Sunni Yisrael should disappear into the Mediterranean, whatever. After everything we're asking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should do Nisim. He should do us a lot of Nisim now. So if we want to lead our lives with security, we're going to put away 75% of our income in a savings account, and then we're not going to give any tzedakah, and we're going to spend, we're going to be very cheap on mitzvahs, and we're going to figure out every kula on the book. So why should the Rebbe Shalom go out of his way if we're not going out of our way? If we're going to follow, there are rules and regulations in the Shulchan Aruch. There is such a din, a person is not mechuyev to spend more than one fifth of his total savings in order to perform a mitzvah, because we're afraid that he's going to go broke. But if a person is going to use that klal when it comes to these mitzvahs, where the nature of the mitzvahs is pesumi nisim, the whole idea behind pesumi nisim is that we're calling on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam, you did it in the past, you did nisim for us, you turned over the whole world for us, so we request of you, you should continue to do it in the future. So if we're asking him that he should go out of his way, so we should, if need be, we should go a little bit out of our way. But even if he's a noni ha-machazer al-apsof, and he should also go to get some money in order to be madlik ner Chanukah. Perhaps. Perhaps we don't have, perhaps we're not obligated to tell the whole story. Just the mikzah. That's the question. Rabbi Yosef Engel has an essay a whole essay dedicated to the Chiddush of the Beit Ephraim. Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius was a businessman who lived in the city Broad in Galicia. He was not the Rav in the city. He was just a businessman. Successful businessman, a rich man. The Rav in the city was the one who wrote the Sefer Lev Arye Achulin. It's also a classic, but it's not as famous as Zeus Balavot, as the Beit Ephraim. So in the tshuva, Shalosh Tshuvos Beit Ephraim, he has a tshuva in connection with Neres Chanukah. He comes up with a big chiddush, and Rabbi Yosef Engel thinks that his chiddush is, may even be correct. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Shultas. Tosfos quotes the Shultas, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes it. If you have leftover oil after Chanukah is over, so the leftover oil and the leftover wick, you're not allowed to use for Dibrei Chol. Li'olam, it's really difficult. Why should that be so? You ought to say that it's Tashmishei Mitzvah Nizrokim. You perform your mitzvah, so whatever is left over after the Zman HaMitzvah is over. What do you do with the leftover lulav and esrog if the sukkah is over? You can do whatever you want with it. You can eat it. A lot of people make meichel out of the esrog. You can do whatever you want. What do you do with the skacha, the sukkah, if the sukkah is over? What do you do with, let's say, an old torn up talus? What do you do? You can throw it in the garbage. You can do whatever you want with it. That's halacha, tashmishei mitzvah. On the zrokim, only tashmishei kedusha on the gnozim. Tashmishei kedusha means the Torah is filled in the mezuzah. Things that have the Torah written on them are called tashmishei kedusha. Tashmishei mitzvah on the zrokim, a shofar, a tzitzis, a sukkah, a lulav. So why shouldn't the same apply over here? That's what all the acharim ask them. Keren Oyer. I'm a Sefer Shabbos, another acharim ask. Very peladic. Why should the shiltas? We don't have this brighter. The shiltas quotes a brighter that we don't have at all. Shiltas was from the period of the Gaonim. He lived in the, he wasn't one of the Gaonim himself. He knew how to learn very well. He was a Goyim. But a Goyim, officially the title, Goyim means the president of the yeshiva. Dr. Lamb is the Goyim. The Rebbe's in yeshiva, not the Goyim. The Goyim had to raise the money. He was the president of the institution. Rosh yeshiva is Goyim Yankin. That's what it meant. Rosh yeshiva is Goyim Yankin. So the kids, they used to call him Goyim. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. A lot of those Goyim were not Goyim at all. He said, my grandfather knew how to learn better than most of those Goyim. Somebody wants to... Professor Shaul Lieberman once asked Rav Soloveitchik, what did he say about a certain shiva? So he said, garnished. He didn't know how to learn. What do you get so excited? So the guy made a mistake. Doesn't mean anything. So the Shiltas lived in the Tkufas HaGoyinim. He was one of the great Goyinim of all generations. But he himself was never a Rosh Hashiva. He wasn't really one of the Goyinim himself. Officially, he didn't have the official title. So in the Shiltas, he quotes a Braisa that we don't have in the Gemara anyway. The Braisa that says, and Taisus quotes this from the Shiltas, the name of his Braisa, that the Moshe Shemin Shebiner, the Shemin of Ptilus and Ishtaira, after Hanukkah is over, so he's supposed to Otanam Madura Bifneyatma, the Sofa, you're not allowed to use it for Dibre Chol, for secular purposes. Very shrewd, what Tuktuvim Sofa remains even after the Zman HaMitzvah is up. Obviously he treats it like Tashmishei Kedusha, not like Tashmishei Mitzvah Mechad Deisa. Why should it be so? It's very shmur. So they say apparently the Shiltas is of the opinion that he treats the Neiris of the Menorah that we light on Hanukkah like in the Beis HaMikdash, that the Shemin of Tzila in the Beis HaMikdash Taka is Kodesh. Whatever will be left over in the Beis HaMikdash will be Kodesh. Of course that's not Tashmishei Mitzvah, that's like Korbanos. The Shemin that you burn in the Beis HaMikdash with the Tzila, that's like an object of a Korban that's burnt on the Mizbeach. So whatever is left over in the Beis HaMikdash, Avada has to be burnt. You're not allowed to use it yourself. Can you use it for the Bar Mitzvah? I don't think so. I don't think so. The Pashtun says that not. You may not use it for the Bar Mitzvah. That's how the Balamor interprets the Gemara. The Balamor interprets the Gemara that there is a machlokes amoraim in the Gemara whether mutar lehishtamish liora or rotar lehishtamish liora. Is one permitted to be nene from the or haneir of the Ner Chanukah? And even if you hold that it's rotar lehishtamish liora, the Baal HaMor interprets that there is a machlokes amoraim to what extent is it rotar. The one opinion in the Gemara is that Ner Chanukah rotar lehartis mois kinegdo. You're not allowed to count money. You're not allowed to look at the coins in order to figure out how much money you have. So the Baal HaMor claims that that opinion in the Gemara holds that it's only rotar to be nanif in the Oraneir for secular purposes, to count coins, but to learn a sefer, to use it for Dvar Mitzvah, that would be permissible. And the other opinion in the Gemara holds not so. No, absolutely not so. Also, the Shtamish Liora at all. Not only also the Hartzis Mois, also the Balamar learns also the Hartzis Mois, Kenegan Erchanik is a Kula. Other Rishonim say, no, it's a Chumrah. To read a book is Zicharasa. You have to squint and read like this. So just to look at the coin, what you can count the coins, even if you don't look at it, you can feel the coin to tell what's a quarter, what's a nickel, what's a nine. You can figure it out without looking. Or you want to count how many, you know that you roll nickels, you don't know how many nickels you have. So you can put your hand in your pocket and you count 5 nickels, it's 25 cents. So you want to make it easier, so you look at how many nickels you have. So Tamashayim Sevi Farish, even, also the heart is a chidush lechumra, that's not lekula. Even though you could have gotten this hano without using the oran air, you could have counted the coins and come to the number of the 5 nickels. Nonetheless, it's still a chiddush lechumah that you're not allowed. So the Baal HaMor always has a chiddush. Baal HaMor always has the original interpretation. He says, no, also the Hartzis Mois is a kula. It's a chiddush lekula. That you're only not permitted to use the Ner Chanukah for secular purposes, but with Bar Mitzvah is permissible. Why? Because that mandam in the Gemara holds that the reason why it's also l'shtamish lior on air is because of Bizui Mitzvah. The Gemara has a whole sugya. Also, the Ishtamish Le'er because of Bizui Mitzvah. So it only constitutes Bizui Mitzvah if you use it for a secular purpose. There's Kodesh and there's Chol, and we don't combine the two together. They're two different things. The Kodesh has to remain Kodesh, and the Chol has. We have to realize that the Chol is Chol, it's not Kodesh. You can't have a Taruvus. But if the person wants to use an Er Chanukah for Divine Mitzvah, that Mandam and Gemara holds that you're allowed to. The first Mandam and Gemara holds you're not allowed to. Why? Because he holds that the menorah that we light is zechel of nourish of the Beit HaMikdash, and we treat it as if it's Kodesh. And then the Baal HaMoreh says, well, how do we pass in Allah HaMaita? He says, we pass in like the Mandam of Bizui Mitzvah. He says, we pass in Lekula, that it's not the Chiner Kedusha Yeshbo. The Gemara has an expression in the Sugya of Shabbat. What are you going to say that? Ner Chanukah has a Kedusha like in the Beit HaMikdash, so the Gemara is rejecting this original opinion that the Ner Chanukah has a status like a like Neiris in the Beit HaMikdash that has Kedusha, and the only reason that we accept that it's also the Shtamish Le'er is Bizui Mitzvah, so therefore the Baal HaMoreh passes Halacha L'maisa, if you're going to be Mishtamish Le'er HaNeir L'Dvar Mitzvah, it's permissible. That's what he says. So Rav Soloveitchik used to say, that's Rav Shlomo Levilna says also, Rav Shlomo Levilna Tainas, the Nusach that it says in the Masech HaSofim, HaNeiris Halal HaKedushim, is a dead giveaway that we shouldn't paskin, that the Masech HaSofim doesn't paskin like the Baal HaMoreh. So the Masech HaSofim holds like the first Mandoma. The Ner Chanukah does have Kedusha, that it is Dumi the Neiris in the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore should be also the Shtamish Liora, even the Dvar Mitzvah. So this Dechemet quotes this letter from Rav Shlomo Levilna. So he says he doesn't see what the strong Raya is from the Nusach of the Masech HaSofim just because HaNeiris Halal HaKedushim. He says the Ramban writes in Masech HaShabbos and the Sugya Ben Madlikim and the Sugya of Chanukah that Tashmishei Mitzvah Nizrokim only applies after the Zman Mitzvah is over. But called Ma Mitzvotzai, so it is hooked to the Mitzvotzai, has a Kedusha, Le Mitzvotzai, of a temporary nature. If you have Tashmishi Kedusha, that means that it has a permanent Kedusha. And if you have Tashmishi Mitzvot, that it has a Kedusha, called Ma Mitzvotzai.
Summer is a time when we all tend to relax, and perhaps tend to become lax. And so, we are here, some of us, for the first time, after a summer of relaxation, and we are here physically, and also we are here to renew ourselves spiritually. Perhaps it's an unfortunate thing that it was the summer during which such important events took place. Perhaps because it was the summer, some of these events went unnoticed. I had the privilege to attend a UJA luncheon at the Waldorf Astoria in honor of the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, Menachem Begin. There were over 2,000 people at the luncheon, and perhaps what was most remarkable, that when we arrived, we found that there were yarmulkes and benches on the table. And when people came in, perhaps 50 or 60% of the men put on the yarmulkes. And I'm sure that most of those people were people who do not ordinarily wear yarmulkes. And then, of course, we were privileged to hear the Prime Minister speak. And he spoke significantly about Tisha B'Av, among his many other remarks. The following Sunday, which was Tisha B'Av proper, he was interviewed on Meet the Press. And again, he spoke about the historic meaning of Tisha B'Av. He indicated that Tisha B'Av was a time of great tragedy for our people throughout the ages. What he didn't say on television, and what he did say at the Waldorf on Friday, was that our sages tell us that Tisha B'Av was also a day upon which the Mashiach was born. He said he wasn't sure precisely what Mashiach was, whether Mashiach was a man, an emissary of God, or simply a great feeling, a groundswell inside all of us, to understand the occurrence of historic events, and to know that we are in an era of great historic progress. I remember just perhaps 10 years ago, after the Six-Day War, asking myself, now that we have Jerusalem, what need is there for a Tisha B'Av? For what are we still mourning? And I must say that it took Menachem Begin to explain to me the answer to that question. The first Tisha B'Av, many of you will recall, took place in the desert. After the spies, the Meraglim, that Moses sent to spy the Holy Land returned, they told the people about the great giants that inhabited the land. And the people, fearful of what they might find and fearful of engaging these giants in combat, began to cry. And the Lord said to them that if you people have now cried for nothing, forgetting the fact that it was I myself, who took you out of Egypt, I, who am certainly capable of defeating these giants, if you are nevertheless fearful, you therefore cry for nothing, I will give you something to cry about. Tradition tells us that this incident took place on Tisha B'Av, and as a result, all of the tragedies that befell our people befell them throughout the ages on Tisha B'Av, because our ancestors failed to manifest sufficient belief in God's providence. Now, of course, that we, for the first time, have a leader, a prime minister of the state of Israel, who not only believes in God's providence, but who seeks God's assistance at every turn, perhaps we have begun to reverse the process. And therefore, it is an extraordinarily great thing that we have a man such as Menachem Begin, now the prime minister of the state of Israel.
We thought that we would start this year before the Yom HaNoraim to give us all an opportunity to understand with greater depth and greater sensitivity the meaning of the wonderful days, the days of awe that face us. And so it is my pleasure to introduce this evening our good friend, Rabbi Benjamin Black. Pleasure to be back again with old friends. I feel like a regular visitor here. And I must commend you for the particular direction your series has taken. I think it's an excellent idea. Before the Yom HaNoraim, and in particular before Shavuot night, to get together and to try to understand exactly what it is that we are trying to do on the Yom HaNoraim. To put it into the perspective that you've already placed it, you know that we're working our way towards one moment. The end of Yom Kippur, we want to be able to shout out the Shana Haba from Yerushalayim. The experiences of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are supposed to put us into that kind of frame of mind, into that kind of religious sensitivity that we deserve in coming of Moshe. So, let us try to grasp a little bit clearer what it is that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, in their separate ways, hope to accomplish. And as in the past, you may recall, I always ask you to do a little work with me. For this year, I would like you to have a chumash. There is a chumash, I'm sure, in front of all of you. I'd like you to get it ready. I'll tell you when to open it and to what pages to open it. So just have it available. And before we go to the chumash itself, and before we go to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I want to share with you a question. A question that is called in our tradition, our old Tasha, something that's been asked many, many times already on a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. You know that we are supposed to, on these days, give an accounting of ourselves. Well, not only on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur does this take place, but at the end of life, when the final moment comes, we depart this earth, then we have to face our Creator. And that's one of the three things that we always have to be aware of. And I'm Boss, and you're not the whole ass, and here's the punchline, and this is a phrase that I'm interested in. Well, if they me out the Oski, we say what? Then the Pesach. That's the Pesach. It's know before whom you are destined to give din v'cheshbon. I want you to translate that for me, because that phrase has a problem connected to it. Din means what? Judgment. There is going to be a judgment of sin. What's cheshbon? An accounting or reckoning. Okay, we have a lawyer here, a couple of lawyers here. Tell me something. Which comes first? Cheshbon or din? Din or cheshbon? You tell me. Before you give a stock, you're supposed to have a reckoning. You're supposed to go into all the details of the case. You're supposed to figure out what and where and when. Lami amachna cheshbon, kidei tol kenen zayin adin. That's like a reckoning, so that we can come to a final decision. I don't understand. Dalit ne'liyat ha'osit li'tein din v'cheshbon. I took the trouble to look into an English translation. I was just trying to see if you have these words here with Arabic and with English. The way they get around the problem is by treating you unfairly in English. They say, and know before whom you are destined to give a final accounting to the English translation. Well, that's wrong. Din v'cheshbon are two separate words and sign a final accounting, but if they're going to tell it to you in translation, you'll have a problem, so they say final accounting. Din v'cheshbon is improper order in terms of olam ha'ba. And interestingly enough, we have precisely the same problem. Not only on the once after a lifetime kind of tribunal that we will have to face, but even on a yearly basis, we also have 2 days. 2 days on which we are judged. The first of those days is called Yom HaWat. Yom HaDin, don't be frightened. Yom HaDin, the day of judgment. Judgment comes first. And as a matter of fact, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, don't be nervous. With regard to Rosh Hashanah, the Halacha, the highest address, you sit in funny, and you're not afraid, everything is in sweet, and you are assured that everything is going to be okay, so you dress in yontif, you close, and you say, I'm not nervous, and you don't klap the chalchek on Rosh Hashanah, and you don't worry, and you don't mention your sins, and everything is fine, then the din will be perfect. And then afterwards, after the din, you have Yom Kippur, whose primary mitzvah is what? Cheshbon ha-nefesh. That seems to me a reversal of proper sequence. You're going the wrong way. I don't understand. If the din has already taken place, what role is there for a cheshbon? What are you doing? I understand. The din is finished. Even as in the Mishnah, summarize. Even as in the Mishnah, we have a problem with regard to the other world, din v'cheshbon. So too on a yearly basis, I don't understand. Rosh Hashanah is din, Yom Kippur is cheshbon. The din's gone the wrong way. Why is that? In order to deal with that problem, I have to share with you a remarkable concept that gets to the heart of the difference between the 2 days, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Thank you, question. So we're going to give it a chance anyway, 10 days of Shulchan, is that what you mean? I want to get to the heart of the 2 days themselves, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and ask you in general, what do these 2 days hope to accomplish? What do they deal with? The concept of what? Tshuva. Be a better person. Or repent. Tshuva is a mitzvah. Now, a mitzvah, I would think, should have one manner of fulfillment. How do you do tshuva? Well, Rosh Hashanah tells you you do it in one way. There are halachas of tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. And then Yom Kippur comes and tells you you do it in a totally different way. On Yom Kippur, you have the fear. On Yom Kippur, you have the fasting. On Yom Kippur, you have the achet of klatin. And on Rosh Hashanah, you don't have all that. I want to understand, why are Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur so different halachically if they hope to achieve the very same thing? Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are different because they have different backgrounds, different bases, different reasons for being, and even though they both seemingly deal with tshuva, they deal with two totally different kinds of tshuva, which can only be understood if we get to the basic understanding of these two holidays in terms of the way in which we have to analyze every single none of those things, why on that particular day, you will tell me a story. Historically, something happened then that was related to the theme of Zman Chayruchim, which justifies why the holiday of Pesach is on that particular note. Shavuot, Matan Torah, Sukkot, Hanukkah, Purim, any other. Could you tell me what is the historic basis of Rosh Hashanah and what is the historic basis of Yom Kippur, which justifies the fact that these 2 days have special meaning in terms of tshuva and our coming close to God? In what way do these days relate to sin, which was forgiven by tshuva? Okay, let's analyze. What happens on Rosh Hashanah? Why is Rosh Hashanah Rosh Hashanah? Why is that the day that we hope to have a special relationship with God and do tshuva? In what way is Rosh Hashanah connected with sin that is forgiven? What is Rosh Hashanah? What is Rosh Hashanah commemorating? Tell me. Thank you. You got 2 different answers. I hope you recognize that. One of them was correct. Watch. We first should make sure that we all know the correct answer. Everyone shouts out usually when you ask, what is Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is the day the world was created. That is not true. The world was not created on Rosh Hashanah, because we say that this is Rosh Hashanah coming up 5738, and that would mean that the world was created 5,738 years ago, and that's not true. The world was, in all probability, according to our Rishonim, the Rambam and countless others, the world was created many, many years before. These are scientists, you know, the earth, in language. Rosh Hashanah commemorates what? Not Riyas HaOlam, not the creation of the world, but Rosh Hashanah commemorates the day on which Adam, man, first man, was created. And you'll say to me, it's a big deal. We're arguing about a total of 6 days, not so. Here, I think it may be off the track for a moment, but I think it's very important to be said and for every intelligent Jew to know. The Rambam made extremely clear that the week of creation, what we refer to as the week of creation, was obviously not a week in the sense that we describe 7 days as a week. And I'm not talking now about someone who has to speak defensively, because evolutionists have proven, supposedly, that the world is many, many millions of years old, then, in defense, we say the first week of creation is early. The Rambam said it. The Rambam said it based on a careful analysis of the text, based on a simple insight into the story at the beginning of Bereshit, which any one of you can figure out very quickly, because the sun was created on what day? Fourth. Now, if the sun was created on the fourth day, if you tell me what the third day and the second day and the third day were, then obviously they were not days in the sense that we describe a day. Then obviously, what were they? Periods of time. The Rambam already says, and I said that the first week of creation represented periods of time which may have lasted millions of years, for all I know, but on the sixth period of time, man was created. Now, I want to go a step further. We've already established that Rosh Hashanah is not the creation of the world, but Rosh Hashanah is the creation of Adam. Now tell me, why should that day, Rosh Hashanah, have been selected as a day which concerns itself with sin, undoing of sin, tshuva, getting good with God? What does that have to do with that? Okay, man was created. But listen, if Pesach is Manche Ruseinu, it's Manche Ruseinu because that's the time we got our freedom. If Rosh Hashanah is a day of tshuva, if Rosh Hashanah is a day when we undo that which was created by our sin, it must have something to do with sin and tshuva. What does it have to do with sin and tshuva? Why is that day selected as the particular day for tshuva? Because the answer is simple. Because Rosh Hashanah commemorates not simply Riyas Adam, the creation of man, but a story which took place on the very first day when man was created. And what was that? On the first day, you know, it didn't take man too long. wondered how could he undo the effects of this sin? Did Cuba, the first Rosh Hashanah in history, was indeed a Rosh Hashanah of faith and Cuba, historically. I now see that this is part of the essence of the day. The day is concerned with undoing a sin. Next question. This is extremely important. Could you tell me what was the sin? Because we are going to see that there are two kinds of sin. There are two categories of sin. And if we recognize even at the outset that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are totally different in the way in which we fulfill them, the reason obviously is going to lie in the fact that they are dealing from the historic point of view or what we remember about them with two totally different kinds of hate and therefore two totally different kinds of humor. What was the sin of Rosh Hashanah? Well, you don't have to go into the whole analysis of it, but just what was the season? Man was told, hey, Tata, stay away. And men and women, if you want equality, you're going to get it in every story, men and women disobeyed and ate from the tree. Therefore, what they were not allowed to do, they did. They sinned. Right? And then, Tshuva, that was Rosh Hashanah. Could you tell me, this I find interesting that so many people don't know, could you tell me what was Yom Kippur, why Yom Kippur chose as Yom Kippur? Don't just tell me it's 10 days later and you're given a chance for 10 days, that's not true. Yom Kippur also has a story. Yom Kippur also has a historic moment with a historic message. What was Yom Kippur 1? Why did that day assume the very special significance that it had? It was also connected with forgiveness for the sins. What was it? Egel HaZoheh. The first time the phrase "Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kiborecha" was heard was, I remember Rashi gives the exact sequence of time. Moshe came down with the tablets, and the Jews were sinners. He broke the tablets. What day was that? Shivat Batam, and that's the fast day that explains the easy part. Then there were 40 days when he prayed, and that wasn't finished yet. God did not yet accept the prayers. The 40 days in Shivat Batam led us to the first day of Elul. He went up to the mountain again, another 40 days, prayed to God, and finally at the end of the second 40-day period, which was from Rosh Chodesh Elul, 30 days plus another 10 days, that was the 10th day of Tishrei, God finally said, okay, enough. Don't nudge me anymore. I forgive you. I forgive the people. I know Hashem, so lachti tibolech. Yom Kippur commemorates the day when God forgave the Jew finally for a sin, and for which sin? Which sin are we discussing now? Maaseh HaEgel. What was the sin? Tell me. The Jews, what? Don't be afraid. The Jews worship the golden calf. Is that what you think is? Okay. Now we're ready for the question. And now we're ready for a fascinating question whose answer will enable us to see Yom Kippur in a totally different way. Could we turn, please, to Shmos chapter 11, page. I'll tell you the page in a moment as soon as I find it. I'm going to skip the beginning of the story, but I want to come to the heart of it. Moshe sees the egel. Shocked beyond words, he throws the roof on, he's broken them already. And finally, 7:25, Vayar Moshe's arm to Ruahu to throw a Aaron the Shimon on Mayhem. Moses saw that people were broken loose, but Aaron had let them loose for his derision among their enemies. Vayar Moshe to Shar Hamachne, Vayomer, Mi Lar Hashem Kemo. Then Moshe stood up in the gate of the Machne, in the gate of the camp, and he said, Mi Lar Hashem Kemo. The famous lady, and let's take care of this terrible son. What did they do? Remember, being harsh, but the only way. They had worshipped Avodah Zarah. They deserved the death penalty, and this is what they got. So the sons of Levi did what Moshe told them to, and there fell on that day 3,000 people. Says the Talmud on this. Why 3,000 people? Because how many were there who worshipped the golden calf? How many were there who were the villains of the story? The answer is 3,000 people. And what happened to them? What happened to them? They were killed. They were just outcast. By Yini Machra, second third. And it was on the next day, by Yomer Moshe El Ha'am, and Moshe says to the people, Atem Chatotem Chatoro Yizoga. Now listen. Moshe had just carried out the deed, right? Moshe had just carried out the deed. It was finished. All the villains were executed. Now Moshe turns to Moshe, to the other people, all the other people. And he says to them, you have sinned a great sin. The Yom HaDin was over. And he turns to them and says, you have sinned a great sin. The Yatza, and now, Ela El Adoshem, I will go up to God, who I perhaps, Ha-ha-ra, the same word as the Yom Kippur, the Yom HaDin was over, in a long word time, Ulai Ahakra, perhaps I can gain Kahara